So I run a show in Lawrenceville. That's the name of the place. Called Nasty Slam, and I am the DJ. And we are having $500 cash prize for Poet in September. It is decided by audience applause, head-to-head competition. So bring your friends, stack the deck, win 500 bucks. It's called Nasty Slam. It's not called Fair Slam. This is, when I say old shit, you say old shit. Old shit.
Old shit.
I'm reading some old shit. These are three poems. A prose poem was one of them, but I'm having immigrant feelings. For, I don't know, some reason. Daughter of the American Revolution. I almost failed my citizenship test. There were 10 questions. I missed the first two. To be fair, I was 12, and I explicitly told the old lady administrator I fared poorly on dates. My first lesson as an American, exposing weakness merely opens you up to attack. My friend Matilda will slough the skin of slavery over coffee. 400 years intoned reverend. The goal, she will explain, is to miscegenate things just. The future looks like you. This is when she will point at me, melting pot of wrongs made right. What day was the Constitution signed? A trick question. Designed to confuse, most people answer 4th of July. I know this because I will for years poll my U.S. American friends. All of them miss the question. I have committed the date to memory perfect in my acquired patriotism. Matilda laughs when I tell her I'm more American than she. Not possible, she'll say, and I know she's capitalized the letters. I am a daughter of Africa, Europe, and America. I tell her I am the same. A different Africa, a different Europe, a different America. Plus, she'll say, I was born here. I'm not sure that counts as much as she thinks. The second question I miss, what day did the Civil War end? I mishear it and answer, slavery? The old lady will repeat the question, charitable in her administration. On Appomattox, I will respond. She will repeat day like I'm deaf until I circle my head slowly in disbelief that sounds like Spanish. I will grow tired of Matilda. Her contests about which shade of brown had it worse will wear me thin. I will try to explain the plight of Latin America, raped by conquistadores, double-raped by America's Monroe Acquisitions Act. I will tell her there is nothing more American than naming yourself after an entire continent, as if there was no one else United States of. I will ask her if she knows the date of Appomattox. My smugness doesn't fit inside her silence. When I swore to be a U.S. American, I was given a flag pin and a letter of welcome from the Daughters of the American Revolution. I looked at this old woman, so different from the one before, hugging me in congratulations as if she'd given me the keys to heaven. September 17, 1787, I said to her. She smiled, confused. April 9th, 1865. She nodded and mouthed, oh, of course, dearie, as if her father's revolution was a secret I kept. She simply delivered flags and soft hugs, a legacy of stick waving and heart palming. And to Matilda, I will say, I took a test to be here. I filled out forms, waited in lines, endured examinations. I wanted it. Don't you see, Matilda? I wanted it. Unlike you. As if that counts for anything at all. I once worked with the Latino Family Center in Pittsburgh, helping undocumented workers tell their migration stories to their children. The children then drew the stories with pastels and watercolors I'd brought along. One of the children, Ignacio, drew a cactus in every draft of his illustration. Here is the river we crossed with a cactus. Here is the mountains where we camped with a cactus. Here is a hostel where we stayed with a cactus. Here is a boat we rowed with a cactus. ¿Qué tiene ese cactus, Ignacio? It's my grandfather, miss, he said in English so his father next to us wouldn't understand. Why is your grandfather a cactus? Because he disappeared. But he was with me. I don't know. I know what you mean, I said. A cactus seemed appropriate to me. Some things are dangerous when examined up close. Later, his father revealed that the grandfather had died of old age during the journey up north. I couldn't tell him his grandpa was dead, so I told him the old man was on another adventure. Maybe a cactus. Disappearing, I have learned, is usually a tragedy or a privilege with little in between. Dictators disappear people, kidnappers do too. But sometimes people disappear themselves. The old cliched went out for a pack of cigarettes kind of disappearance, the kind a person might choose. I'm reading Post Secret one night and I come across a simple postcard with text declaring, my family thinks I died in 9/11, I didn't. This haunts me for days. How does one disappear? How is a person lost? Lost to me implies a kind of ownership. I had something, then I lost it, but it was mine to lose. Disappeared implies something more sinister, a magician, taking something away from the natural order, a conjuring that depletes, a contradiction that culminates in absence. The heroin crisis is at a breaking point in Pittsburgh. During a discussion about the war on drugs at a local arts center, I hear stories of white crime going unpunished, of black people being disproportionately arrested on the streets, a different but similar kind of disappearing. I attempt to reconcile the racial injustice in crack sentencing versus cocaine. There's no rationale except racism. And Nixon cronies admitted it. The war on drugs was really a war against hippies and minorities, a way to incarcerate that which you choose not to see. Being a black or brown body in this country can also be a disappearing act. When I say this in Spanish on the phone with my mother, she agrees with me, without first verifying which country I mean. In downtown Pittsburgh, at a bar, I meet an American man with feelings about immigrants, guns, and Donald Trump. He tells me that immigrants deserve a fair shake, that deportation is cruel and unusual measure, and he drinks magic hats, insisting that all human beings deserve a shot at a life where no one tries to kill them. I cannot disagree. He argues that Britain makes do with unarmed cops, that guns really do kill people, no matter what the gun lobby says. He tells me that he knows Mexicans aren't rapists, no matter what any presidential candidate may say. And then, as he finishes his third pint, he wipes the excess foam from his lip on his sleeve and cheers the Penguins on the television before turning to me. If Donald Trump wins this election, he says, I'm moving to Canada. I'm leaving this country. As a refugee? Well, no, I'm not a refugee. Oh, so you'll be an undocumented immigrant? No, I'm an American. I leave the argument there. But he stays with me, at least for the afternoon. I turn over what it means to leave your own country. I look at my mother and father, a daughter born to them who doesn't even share an accent. How do we understand this notion of better life? I try to figure out if I could leave my country that kills people like me, my country that calls me rapist, criminal, and thug to applause. The people start over all the time. I ask a friend of my father's who works at the Border Patrol what deportation looks like. Where do the deportees go? He tells me they go back to their country of origin. I ask him again, right, but do they end up like at the border? Do you take them to their homes? Where are they dropped off? He looks at me like I'm a puzzle he cannot solve. They go back, Adriana. That's what we do. We send them back. What matters is that they're no longer here. And this is my last poem that I'm doing about immigrant feelings. And I apologize. It's a little heavy. Yeah. To the children detained in McAllen, Texas. I read that many of the children in detention regress. Toddlers return to wetting themselves. Diapers long since abandoned emerge from cardboard boxes, a renewed chorus of Velcro. I've heard the children stop talking. Don't understand why mother, father, parent, person doesn't answer a quieting call. I've heard they wake from and into nightmare. I've heard that social workers cry on the phone when they give the parents reports. I've heard it's one phone call every 3 weeks. I've heard the children fall silent, that it's up to the parent across the country in a different jail to comfort, to come up with conversation, to fill the 7 minutes allotted. I've heard some just say, te quiero. Over and over again, there is nothing else about this to remember or discuss. I've heard that some of the children will say te quiero back, and that it's so much harder to hear than say, the ears that somehow make the chest caught prey, the throat a trap. I've heard that some of the children have already forgotten their mother tongue, that their muscles bend in a foreign direction, that they've forgotten the sound of their mother's voices. I've heard some of the children call their social workers mother. I've heard that some of the parents have already been deported and don't want their children to be, that they'd rather live without them than let their children return to certain death. I've heard that some parents wait for their babies on the border, pacing a new road, undamming a new tributary. I've heard they throw the pacifiers in the river. I've heard a mother threw herself in the river. I have driven past the compound. It's next to the airport, a mile from my parents' house. The sign in front is nondescript. Nothing says there are hundreds of children in here. Nothing says here is a place where forgetting happens. Here is a place full of what's forgotten. I've heard they pray, the children, that even when everything else is a distant memory, that they still try to speak to God. I speak to God when I can too. And I hold my baby. I hold my son like I hold the papers my parents carried, like a reliquary for a dead saint, like the blood of a savior. I keep him close. I teach him te quiero every night, as if my love could be prayer enough. Thank you.